We Talk Podcasts is now proudly presented by Geek Nation Tours. The zombie apocalypse is imminent. Could you survive? You'll have a better chance after completing Geek Nation Tours Zombie Apocalypse Training 101. Learn to fire weapons, scrounge for food, and actually run from zombies. The time of the geek is at hand. Geek Nation Tours provides fun and unique vacation packages featuring themes such as the Civil War, Harry Potter, board games and beer, sports geeks, in locations such as Germany, Japan, England, and all over America. Visit geeknationtours.com and get your geek on.
Hey, yo, and here we go. It is We Talk Comics, episode 136. I am your host, Keith, and I'm joined by Mo. Say hi, Mo.
Yeah, we've done 136 of these, actually more if you include specials, but we've forced 136 of these on people, and for that I would officially like to apologize. I'm so sorry. We keep throwing this out there for you, but really, honestly, we got nothing better to do.
The audience is literally demanding it, though. So really, the responsibility is
on that. We don't put a show up. That one friend of yours says, "Hey, where's the show? Next show."
That's who I meant by our audience.
There you go.
I use that as my focus group. I assume that represents the desires of in TV. You get one letter. You assume that's 1,000 people that thought about writing a letter. I do the same when we get a tweet.
There you go.
All right. Well,
actually, go ahead.
Yeah, I am calling.
I was going to ask them a question there, but I guess you should introduce them.
I'm going to introduce them. Well, for reasons that will become obvious, I am going to call this episode 136 the live recording of Oxymoron. Yeah, anyone got that? John, live recording. It's an oxymoron. See. So we have the creative team of Oxymoron from Comics Drive. Oxymoron, The Loveliest Nightmare, which just hit stores. Number one just came out. Writer John Lee is introduced. Say hi to everyone.
Hi. Hello. Good evening. Salutations. Greetings.
And Alex Cormack.
Hello, salutations as well.
Bonjour.
Yeah, bonjour, aloha.
Different part of Canada we're in. I'm going to ask you guys this right away, actually, because we were just joking around about it. But do you guys find it's easy to find to get feedback for your stuff? Is it easy when you're doing it? I know we have friends who work as video game designers and app designers, and they could be like, they said, yeah, we have a top 5 app on the iOS store, and we got one letter, and it's the same thing for us. You ask for feedback, sometimes you don't get the amount of feedback you'd like to get and to hear about. How about you guys in the comic book world? You guys get the feedback you want?
I think it's like a slow process. Obviously I can't speak from an artist's perspective. Alex might have a different answer, but as a writer, you kind of build up a kind of network of reviewers to a certain extent, where maybe if you put yourself out there and you try and get your review copies out, maybe a reviewer will review one book of yours, and then they'll come back to review other stuff afterwards because they liked what you did before. And if you keep on expanding your network out, you'll steadily find more returning reviewers. It's kind of like a slow, steady process. It's actually something you have to work on just as much as quoting retailers or quoting readers. Reviewers are people you need to maybe reach out to as well. They're not going to come to you because there are loads of comics out there, and I've been the reviewer. And the second you say you will review comics, you do get a constant stream of people messaging you. So it is a kind of thing you have to work at.
How about from the readers? Do you guys get a lot of feedback from them?
Death threats mostly. Naked pictures. I think to be honest, I love getting feedback. I always worry that I seem incredibly self-absorbed, like just retweeting like praise on Twitter. But I really enjoy it. I think like especially when you're creating comics, a lot of the time it feels like you're working in a bubble. So when you do get that feedback, it's like your lifeblood to a certain extent. Like seeing people are reading it and people are enjoying it and like and they want more of it, you know, it's great. And feedback at any level, either it's like on social media, people contacting you or people coming up to you at conventions, or even like the Comic Stripe guys have a like little group chat thing on Twitter, and people every day will be posting what page they're working on, and everyone's like, oh yeah, that's really awesome, or they'll be sharing ideas. And I think it's a really great motivating thing, this kind of like shared sense of creativity. I'm talking too much.
That's okay. Like,
it is an interview,
and it is. It's interesting, like you said. It, you know, I do hear creators talk about their. They feel awkward retweeting, you know, the praise and everything. But I find that when I see creators who are retweeting stuff that hasn't even been added to, like they haven't been tagged in it, like retweeting positive things, it shows me that they are really concerned with how people are reacting to the work. Like they're actually seeking out. Instead of just like, here's the nice notes I've been sent, but they're actually like, you know, searching the name of the book, paying attention to how it's being received. Like, I think that really actually connects stronger with me that, you know, when someone's engaging to that level. I know like the writer of Midnighter, for example, I have never said a positive thing about Midnighter where I put an at symbol in it for him. But he has favored it every positive thing I've ever said about that book. I know he's watching.
Yeah, no, like I'll search for like an NM who was gone or Oxymoron, Lovely's Nightmare on Twitter. And it's got to the point now where if I'm coming up with titles for projects, I think, will this be easy to Google? Will I not be ambiguous if I search for myself?
How hashtagable.
How long is this going to, But
I do say that if Spider-Man was made today, there would not be a hyphen in it because it does not work in a hashtag.
Just like one word, it'd be hashtag Spider-Man. I'm expecting more hashtag titles to come in the future. The social media age.
Alex, how did you get into all this?
Blackmail.
Yeah, blackmail. I got it's a long, dirty story. But no, what happened was even with the Comic Tribe guys, I was just going to conventions, and I was one of these kids that brought in my portfolio and looking around and trying to talk to anybody like, hey, look, I can draw, you know, can I get a job for me? Anything going on? I'll do a pinup, cover, whatever. And I met Tyler at some point, and then I think I did a Oxymoron pinup. Actually, this is what happened. I did an Oxymoron pinup for back when it was still Red 10. This is going to be Red 10 1 just came out. And he was kind of, they were just like, yeah, do a drawing of any of these guys. And this was, started at Larry's Comics in Lowell, Massachusetts. So I'll give him a quick plug. And he had Tyler there kind of promoting the book, and it was a bunch of us there for like a drink and drop. And I went home that night, drew Oxymoron, like, just because I thought he looked cool amongst the other characters, and he was like hacking some guy with blood everywhere, so like that. And he liked it. It ended up being the variant cover for the issue 2. And from then on, I just kind of kept in contact with him, did a story for the anthology for Oxymoron. And I started working with John because we did a story for the Scamthology, Joe Mulvey's book.
The funny thing about that was the Scam Anthology was that I proposed my idea for the story to Tyler and to Steve, and they were saying, so what kind of artist are we thinking? And I was saying, well, I was thinking maybe an Alex Cormack type. And he'd already chosen Alex Cormack by that point, so it was like perfect synchronicity.
Yeah, it's, I heard that and I called my mother. I'm like, hey, I'm a type. This is great. but yeah.
John Lee's type. That's good. That's good. I bet you're happy about that.
Hey, no.
You know, it's you know, I see some similarities in your style to Joe Mulvey's. Of course, you're much better.
Oh, well, that goes unsaid. I mean, you know.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, we all knew that. Yeah.
But there's my nose a minute ago. That was better than Joe's. So
there's a quality there. You're the Comics Tribe house style there.
Yeah, yeah. It's Yeah, if you look at like Joe's work compared to Ian Lurie's work, I mean, it's
practically the same.
We got a lot of different styles going on there. So
I was halfway through an issue of Epic, and I'm like, oh, I thought this was, and then Emily was gone. I'm all confused.
Lurie's a style all in his own. So.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm glad you guys have said his name, because I've always wondered how the hell I'm supposed to pronounce his first name the way it's spelled.
Oh, no, it's just Ian. In Scotland, like, you'll often see Ian spell I-A-I-N. So we laugh quite a lot when we're listening to American podcasts, and they're like, Ian Lurie.
I thought that was just me because, I read it as Lane. Because
I assumed Ian.
There's Alex.
There's
Alex. What kind of pretentious guy is this guy? He spells his name with a lowercase L.
Artist formerly known as
whatever.
and then maybe get Ian right, and they'll be like Ian Lurie. So it's one name and another. I'm pretty happy that I've got an easy to pronounce name. So
and John Lees, that's nice. That's good.
Yep. Rhymes with sleaze, so that's what I like.
I'm just glad you guys didn't call me Mick Cormack.
We all know you, Dave. It's fine.
How about you, John? You, I know what the standard was, a book in Scotland first, right? And then got picked up by Comics Tribe for America. Is that kind of how you wormed your way in there?
Yeah, like I'm just like, you know, venereal disease. I just like spread. No, how the standard started off was, it was actually, I'd written it, as I suggest, here in Scotland. It was, I'd originally written it for a friend who was an artist, and he was looking for a comic to draw, and he's like, I have this kind of scratchy pencil abstract style, can you write me like a gritty detective psychological drama for me? So I went and wrote a superhero comic, and he's like, I can't draw this. I just kind of tabled it after writing the first issue. I just put in a drawer and forgot about it. And then I saw Stephen Forbes had his Proving Grounds column, and it was his previous incarnation. I think it was on Project Fanboy, which was it's Fanboy Buzz now. And they had the Proving Grounds column in that, and I thought, oh, I've got a comic script here. I'll send it in and let watch it get towards the strands. It'll be fun. And I submitted it. This was maybe about early 2009, and Stephen Forbes actually liked it and said this is good, which is, if you've ever read The Proving Grounds, it's very rare. And so he contacted me afterwards and said, like, no, actually, I think we should try making this into a comic. So he was my editor and kind of helped me through it, and pretty much he was my Yoda, my Obi-Wan, who kind of guided me through the process of, like, making comics and led me by the hand through the whole thing. And once we finished writing issue 6, I had made some vague overtures towards approaching publishers, but it was all kind of totally alien to me, because I went to San Diego Comic Con in 2010, this would have been, and was clutching a couple of my black and white copies I printed, and this was the first convention I'd ever gone to, San Diego. This kid from Scotland had no connections, no idea, so I was just walking up to various people and going, want my comic? And, like, so Stephen said, well, if you want to try a pitch to the publishers, we can do that, and I'll get behind you for that. But me and my friend Tyler James are looking to start a new website called Comics Tribe. It was going to be launched on January 1st, 2011. And they said, it's not going to happen right away, but at some point down the line, we're going to be doing a publishing imprint. This is like Tyler James. He has this vision like years ahead. And he said, would you eventually like to, like, you know, be part of the ground floor of the first wave of titles? And I thought, I could try and, like, pitch this for months and months and months and go through that demoralizing, soul-crushing process, or here's a kind of cool upstart publisher with some talented folk, like, maybe get in the ground floor. So I went for the deal, and I've been involved with Comics Tribe ever since, and I've never regretted it, because they're great guys to work with, and I've got to go and hang out with them in New York, so that's the rest of history, as I say.
Nice.
I hope you understood some of that. It wasn't just like,
no, no, I understood. I understood. And I'll blame it on the cold of the, if you didn't. But no, no.
This is Clash of the Accents. This is one of the most international episodes of We Talk Comics. We've got a Scottish, a Boston, and two Canadian accents. Well, in most Canadian by way of
Denmark. Yeah,
Denmark.
I'll just flick to my American accent if it starts getting too tough.
we got you. Though, I mean, you don't understand. I mean, if you're here in Canada, we're okay. But I mean, if you watch any American TV, if a person has like the smallest accent on a television show in any form, subtitles. I've noticed. They just assume you can't understand a damn thing.
I started watching Hackers on Netflix yesterday. And Johnny Lee Miller is in it, playing an American teenager. And like the affected American accent, like I couldn't stop giggling every time he talks. I just shut it off.
Yeah, it seems like whenever you see British actors in like American shows, they always use a pure, deep American voice like this to try and hide, like, you know, any nuance. It's like the Rick Grimes, Andrew Lincoln kind of y'all.
I've seen American television shows where they have an English guy on. And they put subtitles on. And I don't know if they know where the language originated, but it's called English.
Yeah.
I feel like, as the lone American there, Alex, are you feeling picked on, or are you pretty much sitting there going, shit?
No, no, this is all absolutely correct. And yeah.
Americans are basically stumped.
This is true. I was gonna bring up my favorite just because I see John's got the Sin City ones. I love who's the guy that plays Dwight in Sin City? Or not Dwight? Not Mickey Rourke's character. Maybe it is Dwight. Yeah, they got who was that? It's Clive Owen. Yeah, he has the worst American accent. It's the only one that I've ever actually picked up. Like, oh, what are you doing? It's like that is getting hot right now. That's close enough.
All right,
fine.
I think even just like probably after I take 100, they're like, fuck it, that's the closest we're going to get.
Yeah, I'm just like, it's good enough. All right,
I'll have James L. Jones like do a voiceover later on, it'll be fine.
Can any of you guys do a good Joe Mulvey imitation, actually? Or
yes.
Joe Pesci, either one. We'll take either one.
I should be this thing, but at one point every year at New York Comic Con, when Joe's away from the table, I'll put on a cap and I'll pretend to be Joe Mulvey and sell copies of the cap. Like, Joe Mulvey, how you doing? Bada boom, buy scam, fantastic book. Fantastic book. Not gonna lie to you. Scams, you know, if, fantastic.
If you're not Power looking, it's like he's there. It's amazing.
And he's just like this, and he goes. I just have to move my neck. I can just do this, and, like, you know, pull a jumper up to my chin.
Well, hey, I'll tell you this real quick.
I sweat a lot as well to make it really convincing.
So, John last year told me what was going to happen in Oxy Part 2. I think we just finished Oxy 1. And, or we were like in the middle of it. And he was telling me this is what's going to happen in Issue 2. He told me like in a bar or something like that. And music was cranked. And it was the toughest time hearing him. I caught like one bit. I'm like, okay, so that guy's going to be in it. And he told me the entire plot and probably part of 3. And I'm like, sounds great, pal. All right.
And if he'd heard it, he would never have agreed to it because he gets really demented.
Yeah, I get a script. I'm like, that's what he's talking about. I don't care.
You get the script. You're going,
John, you have to throw that into one of the scripts now, though. Is like page 12. Look, this is the bit I told you about that you loved.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm going to.
This was the orgy scene I was telling you about. You don't understand it.
Do you guys talk to each other via Skype here or anything like that? Or like, how do you guys usually communicate? Just emails?
Yeah, just emails. I just got Skype today, remember?
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yes. Yeah.
Did you ever see Harry Potter with the owls? Like, the owls? That's what we use in Scotland. It's like, we only communicate through owls and heroin. It's like nothing else here.
Owls and heroin, really? All right. That's a country we got to visit.
Yeah. Heroin's quite Moorish, I hear.
So you're a Scottish elf in a fight can always beat a an Irish leprechaun, right? Always take him.
Yeah, I don't know. Like elves, are elves Scottish? I don't know. It's like
they are now.
I
gave them to you.
Do you know? Like this is an actual fact that the Scottish national animal is a unicorn.
Get the hell out of here.
No, that is a genuine, you can look it up 100% fad. Our animal choice is a unicorn. It's on like the national official animal.
Why would you have a fake animal?
All you motherfuckers. All you're choosing your ego when you're things like, fuck it, a unicorn. You're choosing that's a real animal. We're not bound by reality in Scotland.
Sure. Somebody was drinking and they came up with that. That's awesome. That's awesome. What's our national animal? I just assume it's a beaver.
It is a beaver, oh. Yes.
Nice.
Yeah, we got an eagle. We got talons and crap like that.
I think the eagle, did the Canadian government give that to the American government? It's like a gift to the people. The bald eagle was something we're like, here, have that great animal. And you guys were like, okay, we'll never attack you again?
We could have the Canadian goose, but I don't really know why we went with the beaver instead.
I don't really know.
I think the Canada goose is a national
bird. I don't know about you,
bird,
Keith, but I'm pretty fond of beaver.
Oh, we're going to go that route, huh? I thought this was like a family show. What is this?
We got Lee's on. What's the point?
The Adam's family show.
Lee's just really lowered the tone.
The Manson family.
As soon as we invoked Mulvey, we were in trouble.
What family would that be? Exactly. we'll keep it clean from here on in. Yeah. So anyways.
Yeah,
fuck it. That issue where everybody dies.
I've seen
We're lucky enough we got the first couple issues from you, the Oxymoron.
Yeah, because you had the first two issues, didn't you? So I just
I got it. Not to blow smoke up any part of your bodies, even parts that you would enjoy. But I think it's great. I read it today and I was really, really, really enjoyed the book. So, Tyler James co-plotted with you? Is it his original storyline and you guys fleshed it out together? Or how's it working here?
Well, basically it was like me or Tyler and I, like we talked about it quite a lot. He said that he wanted to do kind of like a crime procedural type Oxymoron story and said, would you like to work on this with me? And I was like, sure. And he had his influences. He was talking about, like, you know, Hannibal and Seven and Silence of the Lambs and stuff like this. And I kind of went away and thought about it. And I said, I've got all these weird things, like this Korean movie called I Saw the Devil, which I've mentioned to Tyler so many times, I'm probably sick of hearing about it. And I wanted to throw in, like, some Italian giallo horror, like Deep Red, and make it a bit weird and strange. And so I came up with these ideas. We talked back and forth about what the plot might be. And we sort of talked in generalities and things and said, this should happen and this should happen and this should happen. And like Tyler came up with a couple of characters and I came up with a couple of other characters. And then Tyler went, okay, we've talked about all this. We created a kind of like Google Docs, which had all this information in it. And we talked about the themes and the character arcs. And once we had enough information between us, Tyler said, you know, go forth and multiply and set me off to write the script. And I went off and wrote the first draft of the script and I brought it back to Tyler and he said like this, like this, like this, and he said, but change this. And I was basically looking at Tyler as like the boss because like Oxymoron's his baby, like Swanstown's his world. So I would kind of defer to him in terms of any notes he had. And I would make any changes necessary and send the final draft in. Then Tyler would maybe make some final touches and dialogue back and forth. And then we'd send it off to Alex, who would make it all good with his lovely arm.
You know what? That's kind of cool though, because this character first showed up in Red 10 there, and I know we talked to Tyler. I think Red 10 number one had just come out like the first time, and he was basically saying, "Yeah, people are really, really people are grooving to this character. Everybody's talking about this character, and we're going to do something more with him because of that."
I was present in the original thought process of that because I was at New York Comic Con 2011 when Red 10 1 had just been released and I saw the panic in Tyler's face when, spoiler alert, guys, if you've not read Red 10, like, stop listening. But I remember that everyone was rushing to this comic and, oh my God, who's that guy in the cover? And we're buying Red 10 in droves because of that cover. And I saw Tyler's face like, oh, fuck, we've killed him off. What are we going to do?
Yeah, I know. We mentioned that to him, too. We're like, why'd you kill him?
Book, so it's not a huge spoiler, but yeah, they killed him off right away in that book.
The first issue, and he's like, we fucked ourselves, my God, that character, everyone loves.
Such a vision, not just an interesting concept, and it wasn't even get a chance to get fully fleshed out in Red 10 or 1, but just the look, right, the character. I mean, as an artist, Alex, you must have saw that. Like you said, he went and immediately drew
it.
Right?
I went and for that first one, yeah, I had like, I was thinking, should I do this superhero? No, I'm going to want to do this guy, because... it's a cool look to him.
Yeah, it's a great look.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a blast to draw, so I'll say that.
I don't know how much Moon Knight stole the whole look.
I know, like, Tyler hates it when people post up the views saying, this character inspired by Moon Knight's appearance. And it's like, no, I think you'll find that Moon Knight is inspired by us.
That's right.
That's true. You know, I mean, I don't know how much, like, of that. Until people had kind of gravitated towards the character, I'm not sure how much of a backstory he had or how much he had seen with this character and how much he wanted to do. But like you say, I mean, it's his baby. So the idea that he sounds like he's giving you a lot of a lot of trust in you. And that's kind of cool because he's, you know, I mean, definitely it feels like a John Lee's book.
Well, I'm glad.
And an Alex Cormick book. I mean, you know.
I was definitely trying because I was very excited when I knew Alex was going to be working on it because I thought, like, I know Alex can do some really interesting stuff with page structure and things and has a real kind of, like, he likes to push the envelope with what's on his page. So I was just writing, like, the most out there stuff I could and daring him to try and do it. Like, hi, Alex, 16-panel page for issue 2, good luck.
There's one of those where you'll know he likes, yeah, he said, like... I think he originally said 13. I put, if he actually counted, I put 15. And you'll notice there's one character who has his hand up, and you'll notice it's a strict, straight out middle finger to John. Like, I'll show you.
Yeah, I love that kind of back and forth, like throwing these hard balls now. To just like knock him out the park and like doing like two home runs and then like give me the middle finger on the way. But yeah, so I knew that, and so it was good to have Alex on that. And yeah, I did like the idea of putting a bit of my original touch in it as well, and kind of striking the balance between like doing justice to Tyler's world, but also making it very much feel like my own story as well. So I'm glad that Tyler kind of gave me the leeway to strike that balance. And the thing that I said that I really wanted to step in, I think Tyler liked the idea as well, is a lot of people have talked about Joker meets Deadpool and the idea of like Oxymoron being this cool show stealing character. And my main mission statement was I did not want Oxymoron to be like the cool villain. I didn't want like people to come into this and go, oh, this is a book where Oxymoron is the star and it's all about having fun watching him taking these chumps apart and like, you know, you don't care about the people he's facing. I wanted to create a world where one, you were emotionally invested in who the people who Oxymoron was fighting against, hence why we developed Mary Clark and Deborah Dini. Mary Clark, by the way, I should say, isn't my creation. It was created by Paul Aller and Aaron Houston in the Oxymoron anthology. She's a kind of incidental character in like their story, and I really loved that character at the time, and I thought I really want to expand that character, so that's what I did for this. So I wanted to make you care about her, so it very much feels like she is the protagonist, not the Oxymoron. And the second thing I wanted to do is I wanted to strip away the idea of Oxymoron as a cool, fun, scene-stealing character. He starts off like that, but hopefully, as you'll realise, a bit in issue 2, but especially when you get to issues 3 and 4, is I want people to genuinely hate the Oxymoron. I want them to be afraid of them. I wanted to strip away this, that, oh, he's a cool anti-hero. No, he's the villain, and he's a monster, and he's like horrible, and you should just be despise him every time he appears on the screen or on the page.
Yeah, by issue 3, yeah, you'll get that feeling of him.
Yeah, issue 3, I genuinely, I was, re- I was I just get sent the colored proof PDF issue 3, and it's the first time I've read something and felt guilty. like, my God, what have I done? I'm a monster. And I wrote it and then we was gone, but this is genuinely the nastiest thing I've ever written. It's worse than that.
Yeah. Where was it? I was somewhere. I was in a waiting room. I was in a doctor's office, and I was reading the script, and I got to, like, there's a big thing that happens in number 3, and I got to that, and I was just like, oh my God, and they call my name, and I think, oh God, don't touch me. But, yeah, it's, and, you know, I'm in the middle of issue 4 right now, and, this is going to be a good one too. I mean, the whole thing, I'm psyched to be working on it, and, like, John was saying, how having Mary is the, basically main character. I thought that was, when I first read the first, I didn't know what they were going to do with it. They just gave me a script. And, I sat down and read the whole thing and I was like, oh, this is great. This is how you should do it. This is how you should do a whole main, villain. And I don't want to give too much away for people who haven't read the first one, but, I mean, yeah, after finishing, I'm like, okay, I can't wait to see number 2 now. And I even started drawing number 1 when I first read that. But, it was great. Yeah.
No, I wasn't sure how you guys were going to do it. I mean, knowing that it was going to be, I mean, obviously I knew it was going to be Oxymoron, but I'm like, how are you guys going to approach this entire thing? Because he should be a monster. Like, he should be evil. He should, like, he's not, you know, he's not a good guy, even though he has a point of view. So I was like, how are you going to continue or carry this story for a whole series here? And yeah, I think the Mary character is, I mean, she's a strong protagonist, and that gives you a basis to jump off of.
We've lost audio on John.
Oh, is that the feedback?
I think
that was
so,
coming,
yeah,
for a second there.
Yeah, I can't hear John at all.
Well, we win twice. No.
Oh, there we are.
I think he wants you to steal second, Alex.
I think, yeah.
We both
have. I thought he was asking me to take off my clothes. I was.
Did you mute yourself, John? Did you unplug your headset?
That worked.
What?
Hey!
I went through a very technical process there. I pulled the plug out and put it back in again.
Yeah. Well, if you're working at any sort of help desk or call center, that's the first thing they tell you to do.
That's right.
Turn it back on and off again.
So, yeah.
I love that internationally we're all drawn together by the IT crowd.
Yeah. But yeah, basically I was saying that Oxymoron is like the shark in Jaws, essentially. He's more an agent in other people's development rather than being like the core of the story himself, I'd like to think. And yeah, like, I really do think it gets darker and nastier and more mean-spirited as it goes along. Like, by issue 2, you have this idea that he's this kind of cool, anarchic figure. But hopefully, as it goes on, that kind of gets turned on itself and it's going to get nastier and nastier. And that's what I'm most excited about, to be honest. I've loved the positive response to issue 1, but I'm most excited to see how people react to the later issues, because I think it gets a lot better and a lot darker as it goes on.
Well, I wanted to talk to you about this, John, because number 2... You start off with a very provocative scene, I'll say.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly we know the DNA of this character was, you know, based originally like a riff on the Joker, and I mean, the whole team, like especially in the Oxymoron special, has been expanding it into giving him his own voice as opposed to just being like the Joker in another name. But you start off the second issue with a shooting in a theater. Now talk about it, because I mean, we there was, you know, a shooting in a theater at a Batman movie. So, what brings you to this scene? What do you do with that juxtaposition?
Right. I will say that when we wrote the scene, we thought this was a kind of like a tragedy that was kind of removed by some years, because it had been several years since like the Dark Knight Rises had happened and things, and it just seems like it suddenly became very fresh and relevant, scarily so, since another one just happened recently, which was kind of unintended. But for me, from my perspective of it, why I wrote that was, I maybe have a different perspective on, like, you know, gun violence and stuff, and, like, being in Scotland than, like, you know, like, guys doing, like, in America or in Canada, because, like, in Scotland, we had a shooting that was in the mid-90s, I think it was maybe 96, 97, it was in Dunblane, it was a school shooting, it was, like, a terrible, it was actually quite near me, and I remember I was around the age of, like, the kids that died when it happened, and a lot of other people were really quite traumatised, and it was quite a frightening thing to happen, and this terrible tragedy happened, this school shooting, and within, like, 6 months of this happening, guns were made illegal in Scotland, and that was it. We never had another mass shooting. And so, like, whenever I see this kind of, like, attitude in America, and it seems like you'll see another mass shooting, another tragedy will happen, and then instantly the, like, machinery will set in motion. Like, you'll see the same people coming out in defense of it. Almost before, like, the bodies are cold, the same people are in saying, oh, no, guns are great, let's get our rifles up. And for me, I was watching, the pivotal moment for me was watching the Sandy Hook thing that happened, and I thought, if people aren't going to wake up after this, then nothing's going to change. It's always going to be, and sure enough, nothing did happen. And I recognise it's a different culture in America. I mean, I remember the first time I was in San Diego, I was visiting friends, and we were driving through, we were driving in this car, like, and we were going throughout the city, and the guy that was driving, oh, hang on one second, and because he heard something rattling around in the back, and he kind of pulled the car over, and he pulled this assault rifle from the back seat, so I forgot to turn off the safety. It's rattling around this air. So I unloaded it all this, and I thought, fuck, you know, you're allowed there for those things. And so, yeah, obviously it's a different culture, like, and things, but for me it seems like such an alien, strange thing, the political forces behind, not, like, outright banning it, but even, like, proposing more controls. It just seems a sort of strange, like, thing that I wanted to kind of explore in my own way to a certain extent, and the kind of theory around it, so which is why I kind of, in my own heavy-handed with Max Supervillains way, try and touch on the whole idea of it, like, you know, in the whole, like, oxymoron, tackling the hypocrisy of politicians, like, demanding, like, safer environments by putting more guns in play.
Alex,
I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
I'm interested in your Alex's thoughts.
You know,
no, because you're, I mean, you know, being in Boston too. I mean, yeah. I mean, I can't imagine you don't have an opinion on kind of on what John said here.
No, I gotta agree with John. I mean, it's just, especially, I mean, just, you figure some, I mean, you gotta, I don't want to go too much into it, because, I mean, I know people that are on both sides of the debate, and I don't want to deal with arguments later on, but, just to avoid that.
You're on Alex on Twitter, just wait and see.
We're gonna send this directly to all your family and friends.
Yeah, yeah, send it to my uncle, that'd be great. But no, I mean, yeah, it's the same guy that brought a gun to my wedding, but that's another. I gotta agree with John, and I appreciate that that you guys actually did address this in the way that it was brought up, especially after Sandy Hook. I mean, you figure something would happen, and like you said, it's just, you know, the wheels start turning, and I mean, yeah, being here, and being supposed to be around Boston, where it's supposed to be more, like, liberal, everybody's supposed to be very liberal, it's really half and half, and, I'm all for gun control. I think there should be gun control. I actually like the idea in, Scotland, and I know, I remember here in Australia where they just said, all right, just, that's enough, but, I mean, that's my two cents. As someone who, yeah, I don't even have a gun or anything like that, Now my uncle's American.
We just use machetes in Glasgow. Everyone's much happier.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but just, really, the road rage goes down when you only have machetes. Like,
yeah, it makes it more interesting. Won't evenly match fights.
Well, that'd be great. Yeah, you're
Mad Max with like, machete
getting
run.
Tailgated, they have a machete out like this, and
That's why we're all so much healthier in, you know, the UK, because we have to move around a bit when we get in our fights, you know, and just get to stand on the ground. It's the old cardio going, you have to avoid blades, it's great.
There's the pitch that would work in America. It's not anti-gun, it's anti-obesity. You're just encouraging physical activity.
I just shouldn't talk too much about how it's reduced violence, since Glasgow is apparently the knife crime of Europe. They don't have that, the knife crime capital of Europe. They don't have that on like the billboard when you come in. we like to say you'll have more fun at a Glasgow stabbing than an Edinburgh wedding. I don't want to make this whole, a whole like show about Glasgow anecdotes, but Alex is from Boston. He's had like they've obviously had like issues like with terrorism and things recently. But like the one attempt at a terrorist attack in Glasgow that wasn't really reported much in like beyond like UK news outlets was a guy tried to drive like a car bomb into like Glasgow Airport. The terrorist guy only managed to get the car as far as the entrance of the airport, and it kind of hit the ramp and the car kind of blew up. And the guy emerged from the car on fire, and various local hooligans just walked over and started punching him and kicking him. Glasgow is the one place where you can depend on like the average local person to punch a burning man in the face. That's where I get my ideas from.
Write what you know, John. That's
just look out the window. All right, okay. Oh, there's the next three books right there. All right, great.
Wow.
I was watching a stand up comedy. I watch a lot of British and UK comedy on YouTube, and the like interviewing audience members before the show, and it was recorded in Glasgow, and they're interviewing just random people waiting to get in, and there's like they're not identified by name or anything, and like the second one they show is Grant Morrison.
Yeah, that was for Frankie Boyle.
Yeah,
sure, yeah.
So I'm watching this. How freaking small is Glasgow?
Not that small. I know, like, that when I went to America, that the, you know, when I was in New York, the most common question was, "Are you Irish?" But the second most common question was, "Do you know Susan Boyle?" And I'm like, "Do you know Obama?" But having said that, Frankie Boyle does actually shop at my local comic shop, so.
Based on that, though, John, I would like to know, do you know Susan Boyle?
Yes, she's my mother. No.
I never answered the damn question. So nice. You kind of just assumed. No. I know Wayne Gretzky.
Alex, do you know Ben Affleck?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We go way back. We were going to a Red Sox game, and somebody was asking, like,
tell him I hate the idea of him as Batman.
Yeah.
Still not into this. I'm
tell
so
your good
end. At a time.
Don't interrupt Alex's
yeah. end. He's doing his best. He's doing his best.
Tell your anecdote, Alex.
What's that?
Tell your fantastic baseball anecdote that got interrupted.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it wasn't even that good.
Now,
my best celebrity anecdote was I was in a shop outside a cinema in Edinburgh, and I was in. Like it's like this cinema just outside the cinema is like a DVD shop, so I was looking through the shelves of DVDs, and I look up and the other side looking at DVDs facing me is Tilda Swinton, you know, the actress who did like, you know, the Narnia films and stuff. And like, so like she's kind of incognito, she's like in a jumper and a hat and stuff, and she kind of looks at me and kind of smiles and nods, and I kind of smile and nod back, and then my friend's wife walks up to me and kind of like not noticing she's there, starts looking at DVDs, then does a double take to Tilda Swinton and says really loudly, "Oh my God, John, it's Kate Blanchett."
close enough.
Oh, so good.
Real quick, I got my personal favorite celebrity story. I figured I'd put my hat in the ring too. I was at a show a bunch of years ago, and at the show I got I'm sure you guys have all seen American Werewolf in London, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So I got you remember the bar they go to the beginning, the slaughtered lamb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I have a t-shirt, which is the slaughtered lamb logo, which is the head of a wolf on a spick or whatever. And so I was wearing that day. And, this is one of those shows that had like some celebrities there. And one of them was Davy Jones, from the Monkees. And, a friend of mine is a big Monkees fan. So they asked, could you get an autograph? I was like, sure. And I walk up to him, like the show's kind of just, it's quiet at that point. So I walk up to him and, he looks at me like disgusted and he looks at my shirt. He's like, what the hell is that? I'm like, what? Oh, it's from, American Werewolf London. It's the bar. It's kind of a joke. And he said, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. My friend wrote that song. I was like, Werewolves in London, Words of Vaughn. Oh wow. That's a great song. He's like, yeah, yeah. He's dead now. Right? Sitting for me. You're gonna get the hell out of here. But and oddly enough, it was like a month later he died. So I had to put it down.
That's what happens when you cross Alex Cormack.
That's right. You're not like, sure, huh? Tell you what, pal.
all right, baseball. Because I didn't interrupt you, please. We gotta hear the baseball stories though. We can't leave them waiting. We can't.
I think it was even done. It wasn't even much of a story. My friend was, I had a friend of mine that was asking, where does Ben Affleck sit? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know. That's all that story was. It wasn't
even that story. He built it up.
I really
built
did.
Built it up and then.
I really did.
That's why I'm not a writer, because I don't know what to do with these things. That's why John does the writing. I just draw stuff.
Oh, yeah, John. John, I'm watching. Okay, I'm going to ask you the question, John, as the writer, and here's a little workshop type of deal here. Where does Ben Affleck sit? How would you have answered that in a much more entertaining, completely fictional way?
Well, it all started in Boston in the 1960s, whatever the fuck it is Ben Affleck was born. it was a lot. It was a lot like
1972. Yeah. Old Batman is not. Old Batman is not as old as
enough.
And on that day, a star was born, not entirely unlike that night in Bethlehem when three wise men. And it was. I'm trying to tell a story here, guys.
Sorry.
And it was decreed from that moment that one day this man would be Batman. And oh fuck, I'm bored now. You have to pay for the rest.
Well, I'm gonna tell the story in Brian Bendis method. So you've got five issues of two talking heads going back and forth about where Ben Affleck would sit, what kind of nachos he likes. It's just talking heads, shoulders up, no backgrounds. And then the sixth issue is by a different artist, and it's just a fight scene of Ben Affleck and the pitcher for the baseball game.
Ben Affleck fighting Jennifer Lopez.
Jennifer Garner now.
But it's by a fill-in artist, because, it ran late.
or we could have the Grant Morrison Alex, version. Ben Affleck has an orgy with, like, ninth-dimensional sex gods. And becomes an icon at the end of it.
As an artist, Alex, I'm wondering, since Keith is correct, that commonly happens, it's just two talking heads and the sixth one because it ran late. Is it take a lot of time to just draw two people talking?
If you want it to look interesting, it can take a while. If you just want a head here and a head there and repeat, that'll take you like an hour. No, it, I mean, yeah, you like once in a while, there was something I was working on where it was a lot of, it's a lot of talking scenes where it's like the dialogue continues here and dialogue. So, I mean, a lot of it's just like, if this was a movie, how would you shoot it? That's how I kind of put this all together. Like, all right. And I try to think of like a scene I always go back to, especially when like it's a lot of talking heads is, remember in, Raiders of the Lost Ark, it's it's just them after Marion just got looked like it just got she got blown up, and Indiana's been drinking and Belloc's in the bar, and they just have a conversation, just a conversation, and there's a lot of just great shots in there, which could have just been a camera planted and looking at them. And if you try to keep it interesting, try to keep different angles.
Do you watch everything? Do you watch a movie? Do you watch all movies, TV, kind of the world in general? Do you watch it? Like, how can I use that to draw a better book? How can I use that?
A lot of times you watch a movie, like how this shot looks, or like Coen Brother movies, and like what I watch is a lot of Coen Brother movies, Quentin Tarantino movies, and stuff like that, looking like, all right, how do they put this together and how do they shoot it like this? And for John's sake, Trainspotting is another great movie, just shots alone. They're just fantastic. A lot of my influences like that.
You must be watching some Dario Argento movies.
Oh, yeah. John was mentioning a lot of, that is influence. Yeah, I've been having that soundtrack on Deep Red and Suspiria, yeah. Basically playing in a loop as everyone working.
Yeah, that's what I did as well. Literally, like that's what I played when I was writing Oxymoron, and like it was the Profundo Rosso like Deep Red theme. I would play that on like constant loop, and that was like getting me in the mindset for Oxymoron, and I'd play a bit of Suspiria in there as well.
Yeah.
So we were literally in the same like creative space when we were doing that. I was playing that when I was writing. You were playing.
Actually, John, I was going to say, I just watched Wicker Man again for the first time in a while.
The good one or the shit one? the cherished national Scottish treasure. Or like the horrible Nicolas Cage Afterbirth, which is shit on Scotland's greatest.
I've never seen the Nicolas Cage. All I know is there's a part with bees. Why would you watch that?
That's my Nick Cage right there.
But anyway, so I was just watching and I was thinking, and then Emily was gone in my head, and I was thinking, why didn't he put more songs in Emily and just have like little songs all throughout?
Well, we've got a little score here. We're actually working on the off Broadway musical production. And then Emma was gone with jazz hands.
There you go. Yeah. You have Bonnie Shaw doing like pounding on the door, like that one scene, shaking his butt around, and that could be fun.
The marketing.
We always do that in Scotland. It's just like a tradition.
The marketing plan, though, the big marketing poster, and then Emily was held over.
And then we get, like, the porno remake, and then Emily has come.
Oh,
no. Axel Braun is already filming that.
What was the oxymoron porn title?
I don't know. We'll have to think of one. I'm going to be sending you an email about that shortly, Alex.
All right, yeah, we'll discuss this.
Wasn't the female like
all orgasm?
I see all these cogs turning out there trying to come up with brains.
It's a big dildo he's hitting people with, and.
That may actually happen, and like you don't know where this is going. We could put that in tissue.
Realistic dildo, maybe an oxymoron. That's not bad.
Yeah.
Oh, so yeah. There you go. It's
oxymoron.
Beforehand, I don't want to give anything away, but
So those people who back to oxymoron, because we want to sell this. This is, like I said, really enjoying this. Can't wait. You guys are already you're working on issue 3.
It's all done. I've written all 4 issues. Alex has drawn 3.5 issues, I believe. We're working well ahead of schedule.
That's good.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah. No, that's great. That's great. I'm looking forward to it.
Just shy of halfway through number four right now. And it's basically, it's all map finish. It's a matter of putting in the miles now.
You know, some of these new, sometimes you're newer artists working in the industry. I mean, you don't know how are you going to be in hitting that schedule. And nothing is more important in comics than really hitting that deadline, right? Oh. So, I mean, you feel comfortable with that?
Yeah.
Both of you, yeah.
He's as a total machine when it comes to like doing stuff. He has like what 15 books right now. I think he draws as many comics as Charles Soule writes them.
I think I had five, maybe six books going on. I'm working on two at the same time. I'm working on Oxy 4 and another book called Two Redheads and a Dead Blonde. And that's just from he's a local writer from around where I'm in. Up in Lowell, which I'm sure you guys know well, and
I am a big Kerouac fan, so yes, I do know.
Oh, so there you go. Yeah, actually, yeah. The scenes it was there was a shootout at the Kerouac Memorial, but But yeah, then along with that, and a couple other books, and a couple other books that are on the horizon too. That I gotta work on stuff for that, and but yeah, you know, always busy and bored. So
that's a good scene to have. I always like, I don't think, because people would talk about, you know, how they're bored. I think, I can't remember the last time I was ever bored. I'm too busy to be bored. I'm always, like, doing stuff. But, yeah, like, you know, I think, like, if you look at the pages, especially that Alex is doing now for issue four, I mean, I genuinely, like, almost wish we could just get issues two and three over with so you could see them. Page one and two of issue four are some of the most stunning things I've ever seen, like, an artist send me.
See, he's just saying that because I drew him in there.
It's like, I look gorgeous. I think Alex, like, for me, it's been a pleasure to work with Alex. I've been a fan of his since I saw his early stuff, and, like, this has been the best stuff I've seen from him, you know, even though all his stuff is good, and, like, you know, I'm happy to be working with him, and I want to find any excuse to keep on working with him.
Oh, thank you, John. Absolutely, man. With Standard and Emily Was Gone, there's two books I keep telling, like, you know, read these books. These are good books. And, it's been a blast. And I can't wait till people get a hold of this sucker and see if we get any more jobs after this one. That'll be the interesting thing.
No. I've got, like, you know, one of those, like, t-shirt cannons you can get?
Yeah.
I've got one of them. I'm just going to fire copies of the comic into publishers' booths. It's going to be great.
When the Standard wrapped up, when I finished reading issue six, I literally probably had four storylines of myself that I could have plotted out just so I can imagine. You got a whole bunch you got to have more you want to do with those characters, and there's so much more set up.
See, this is the kind of thing where, like, Tyler hates me, I've happened with the Standard, happened with NM, we was gone, he's like, you know, like, what's the next Standard story? And I'm like, I like how it ended as it is, and he's like, and he's like, okay, what happens next? And then Emily Was Gone, and I'm like, I think that is the ending. And he's like, you're fucking kidding me. And I'm like, no, that's actually how it ends, and we don't want to do it anymore. And he's like, no, stop joking. What happened? Where's
issue? But you know what? It doesn't have to be something for. I mean, obviously you could do Fabulous, but I mean, the corpse needs his own series. Like, the corpse is a great character.
Have you read issue 5?
I am very interested.
Have you read issue 5 of the Standard? I'm not sure if the corpse has much scope for for their development.
But issue 6, there's somebody else taking on the identity.
Yeah, true. If I ever did do a Standard story, the one thing I'd be most tempted to is the thing that no one actually wants to see, which is, one second, tack off. The one thing I want to see is, or that I would do, I'd be most tempted to do, would be a story about the skunk, which I totally have an idea in mind, which I would do. He's my favourite character in the series, and it would be all about this, because it's something that's touched on in the story, the idea that the skunk runs like a rehab centre for former supervillains, and I would love to do a story about that. But I don't know, it's one of these things, like, you know, would you get John again, because he's a busy guy, or and I've got that many other ideas. I'm always wanting to do the next new thing, like, I'm developing like three different and totally new concepts right now, each by a different artist. I'm equally excited about all of them, and I'm not sure if I'd really be in the mindset to jump back in and do something old again right now, but maybe I'll get back to it eventually. We'll see.
Well, John, you could do before and then Emily was gone, where it's just
before
about
Emily was gone. Yeah.
It's just about Emily as like a 7-year-old girl.
Just like half a story about her time in the Orkney Islands. Just
let somebody else give somebody else the corpse right then. Keith would come up with a great corpse story.
Yep.
Right, Keith?
That would literally be beating a dead corpse. So
beating a dead corpse.
There's the title for the series right there.
Beating a dead corpse. I love it.
If someone has a really great original idea, like corpse romance comics, and it's like, you know, the cover's like this kind of simpering woman, kind of like, oh no, the corpse will never marry me if he keeps on murdering criminals. I would read that comic, so if someone wants to do that.
That would be tremendous.
By the way, if you do add anything to Emily, I'm personally going to kill you. I mean, that, yeah. And it's so well... If you add anything else to it, I'm going to be furious.
No, that was the ending we always had in mind for it. And I wonder if you called it a fuck you ending, which I quite liked.
Actually, if you didn't end that book that way, I'd have been more upset with you. It was like when it was kind of like, there was a point of like, he's going to do this, and he's like, play it through. All right, let's do this.
Yeah. I mean, like, if you want, I mean, one of the big influences, obviously we've talked about how, like, David Lynch was a huge influence on, like, and then Emily was gone, like Twin Peaks and Mulholland Drive, stuff like that. But another big influence was a film called Kill List by Ben Wheatley. And if you watch that, that has one of these endings where you're like, oh my god, that can't be the ending. What? No, no, no. And, like, that's what we kind of wanted to do for this as well. We had this idea that you kind of know less by the end than you did at the start, almost.
I've never seen that. I'll have to check that out.
You should check it out. It's called Kill List. It's called Kill List. It's a movie by Ben Wheatley. It's great because it starts off as this kind of like your usual kind of gritty British gangster movie, like kind of Guy Ritchie type movie. Then just grabs this horrific occult kind of supernatural stuff, starts slipping into it. It turns into this horrific horror movie about halfway through. It's great.
All right. I'll check it out.
Should. And this is all I do with Alex. I send them like messages of like obscure British films you should check out.
Oh yeah,
like I've literally been sending them like story outlines for stuff or something we're working on. In the end of every document, it's like, here's your film recommendations for further study. You know, it's like four movies.
Oh, it's yeah.
attach your Netflix receipts to your taxes, Alex. That's right offable.
Yeah, exactly.
Research.
That's legitimate, yeah. No, that works.
Back to Oxymoron, because the people got to read this. I want them to know, like, this is not an origin story, but it is. It seems like it's the first adventure where the character presents himself to the world.
No,
right.
I really want to stress that, because I know I've seen a lot of reviews or a lot of people messaging saying, what's the reading order? Should I read Oxymoron, the anthology, then read The Red Ten, then read this? Or is this a sequel? It's not a sequel. It's not a follow-up. It's set vaguely in the same universe. But the idea is this could be as self-contained a story as possible. You can read this having never read anything else with The Red Ten, never read anything else from Comics Tribe. it's basically the idea is if you were doing like an Oxymoron movie, this would be like the plot of the movie. It's basically its own self-contained thing. It should be totally accessible to any new reader. That was my goal behind it. That yes, if you've read The Red Ten, if you read the Oxymoron anthologies, you might get more out of it. Little details, little kind of foreshadowing. But this is something that's totally self-contained. It's like a what if the Joker came to Gotham City, where no Batman existed, and just like the real one, the cops and the media and the politicians had to deal with them. It's like a high concept that works on its own two feet without having to tie into anything else. So if you're worried
that's kind of like part of my question here is, like I say, it's not an origin story because you don't get his background or why he became the Oxymoron, but it is like his first, like I say, where this is his big introduction to the world, and is how it's coming across, and as you know, I'm sure you probably know, you're probably familiar with the story, but
I now want to know the oxymoron, though, where an oxymoron kills his parents.
I don't want to ever know the origin story.
I know the oxymoron's origin story. Tyler James has told me. I think I'm one of like five people in the world who knows, but I'm sworn to secrecy, so I can't tell you.
I don't even know if I want to ever know it, to tell you the truth.
I'm not even knowing it.
No, I think he's more effective. But
you're not one of the Illuminati, Alex.
What I want to know is he's come from, like I say, he come from Red Tent. So, I mean, he's come from this world where there's a hugely established roster of superheroes.
Yeah.
And yet this is not a super – I mean, there's no protagonist, at least not so far, that is – and I don't see one coming that is a superhero, right? So, I mean, is this even contained within the same universe? Is this almost, I don't know, for lack of a better word, an Elseworlds story? Is this – like, what are we looking at here? And if so, why aren't there any – if he is in part of the same universe – why aren't any of these heroes there?
Well, I guess like you could look at it two ways. Either you could look at it like you said, it's an alternative reality where like, you know, there's no superheroes, this is just like a crime story in the real world, like where Oxymoron like is running loose. But I like to look at it as a prequel where the Red Ten hasn't been formed yet. Oxymoron came first and the Red Ten kind of came after the fact. So maybe these guys are out there in the world, but they've not become superheroes yet, or they haven't had they haven't been given their powers yet. So basically, the Oxymoron like is the first basically in the DC universe, Superman's the first guy to show up, you know. But in our universe, it's the Oxymoron that's the first guy to show up, and like you know, so that kind of sets the tone for this world going forward. And that's why the Red Ten are all such fucked up neurotic people, because. Yeah. They exist in a world where Oxymoron is a Superman figure, where Oxymoron is like the founding, like, you know, ground zero creation where everyone else kind of came forth from. So I had an idea, like, you know, obviously I don't want to go into too much of it, but like Tyler was talking about, you know, where would this story go next and things, and I was thinking, like, I think after the Oxymoron you'd start to see, like, you know, the criminal gangs start to become, like, cults and masked figures and emulating the Oxymoron, and maybe that would result in the rise of, like, vigilantes to clash against that, and from that would kind of organically gradually lead to a world where superheroes would exist, but...
There's a lot of world building going on in this series, then, is what you're saying, and at Comics Tried in general, and this is a great jump on point, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I say, like, you know, this is a jump on point. You don't need to have read anything else from us. You don't need to have read any other Oxymoron, any Red Ten. Come on in this totally fresh and new. And then after you read it and love it, go buy the Red Ten.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you guys, Tyler's not here, but how is Red Ten coming? Do you guys know how the series is going?
It's going well. I mean, like, Caesar's doing the pages and stuff. He's talked about, I think he said he's hoping for the whole series to be done by late 2015, early 2016. We've kidnapped his family, so that should motivate him to keep on going.
I love that you gave him a shout-out, by the way, naming the tower in there how do you pronounce his last name? I can't even pronounce it. Or his first...
You're asking the Scottish guy how to pronounce his name.
But I do love that you. I love that you give. I immediately picked up on that. I was like, oh, that's great. You're giving a shout out here, naming that building after him.
Yeah, absolutely. Because like Caesar's like one of the architects of the Oxymoron as well. Like Tyler is. You know, he's. Yeah. You know, he drew him. You know, he drew him terrifying fashion in the Red Tens. So absolutely, he's a key part of like the Oxymoron's identity, so I wanted to give him a shout out. Two of the key locations where the central confrontations of the series unfold are Vogel Quarter, which is like Tyler James, like his muggle name is Vogel. and you have Caesar Feliciano, and then obviously you have Feliciano Towers. So I wanted to kind of put a little nod to the two of them in there.
You know, I mean, I gotta say, It's the Red Ten that brought me into the first thing. I mean, then Scam second, and that I had a chance to read. But Red Ten's the first thing that brought me into the Comic Stride world, and Comic Stride was a publisher, and why we've always been supportive and always will be. Because I mean, I can't wait for that thing to wrap up. I mean, again, not to blow smoke, but maybe a little bit of smoke because there's a lot of forest fires in our neighborhood of the world, and the air quality is really terrible. Yeah, I mean, I think when a Red Ten wraps up, it could be one of the seminal works of superhero, analyzing superheroes in a new way for this generation. I think it's been a brilliant start.
I absolutely love it. I mean, like, obviously I may be a bit biased because, like, you know, I'm part of the publisher and stuff, but I'm not involved with the creation of the book, so I'm not that inside. I can still look at it from an outside view as a fan. and I think it's fantastic. What I said to Tyler is, it's a horror comic that is masked itself as a superhero story, and I think that's fascinating to watch it unfold.
Superhero conventions, just breaking them right down to their core.
And I love the
Sander did as well, by the way, which is part of what I enjoyed about that.
Well, thank you very much. The Standard for me was like the comic that I thought, if I never get to write another comic book, this, I want everything that I love about comics to be in this book. That was a real labor of love for me, so I'm glad you loved it. But yeah, about the Red 10, what I thought was really impressive about it is that you think you've got the high concept, which is that a killer is taking out all these heroes one by one, but the more the series unfolds, the more you realise all these heroes are basically just horrible people, and they all kind of in their own way deserve like the retribution that's coming to them, and I thought that was really fascinating. It's interesting to sit alongside the Standard, because they do kind of work as mirror images, because they both kind of take apart the superhero myth, but I think the Standard does it in a kind of optimistic way about superheroes should be raised up. And, like, the Red 10 is very much the flip side. Like, no, these heroes are just, like, rotten and false idols and should be torn down. So I do think they kind of work together as counterpoints quite well.
That's great. I agree with you on that. I think that's a nice... One's optimistic and one's a little more... Yeah, I like that. Horror look. Yeah, great. All right, well, we've been telling you about how great you are here. Do you want to tell us how great we are now for a little while?
Not only are you incredibly handsome, but like your voices of silk have made this podcast incredibly listenable for a long time, and your support of Comics Tribe shows you have impeccable taste in comics. Generally, like, I hear, like, you know, you're great human beings, and like all the ladies love you, and so well done in that, well done in being you.
I name dropped you in an episode just two episodes back, John, because we were talking about the Fantastic Four film, and Mo said, "Do you know anyone that's seen it?" And I said, "Well, John Lees has seen it." And Mo said, "Did he like it?" And I said, "No, John did not like it." And if John is saying it's no good, he's not one that is prone to negativity or hyperbole. So
yeah, John does probably a bad scene. He's great movie reviews that you'll catch every once in a while, and. John thought it was
alright.
I'll maybe give it a look, but
no, it wasn't a good movie. This could turn into a Fantastic Four review podcast. I'm not sure we want that.
No. I have not yet had a chance to say how much I loved it because of how bad it was. Personally, I went into I was going to get a bad movie, and it delivered.
See, no, I'm kind of angry because I feel like it wasn't even like. So hilariously bad you could laugh at it. It was kind of just like...
I think if you watch it again knowing it's bad, you would find that it is. I think that was your problem. You went into there not knowing that that's what it was. Like, I went into there, I remember buying the movie ticket, and the guy goes, Theater 4, not to your left, Theater 4, enjoy. I said, oh no, we're watching the Fantastic Four. We're not here to enjoy this movie. looked at me like I had horns. Like, he didn't... at all understand.
My problem with it was I went in knew it would be a bad movie, but then it kind of started to win me over, where the first 40 minutes or so were actually pretty good, and you're sitting there thinking, this could actually end up being a decent movie, my god, I might be wrong, and then like 1 year later flashes up, and then after that it just goes down the toilet. So basically it's like walking into a room where the big sign says, come in here to get kicked in the balls. So you're walking in bracing yourself, going, right, okay, I'm ready. I've kind of steeled myself. I'm ready to get kicked in the balls. I'm all right. And you walk in, and this person's like, oh, it's all right. I'm not going to kick you in the balls. You're okay. And you're like, phew, thank God for that. And he goes, tell me about yourself. Tell me about your hopes and dreams. So you start talking about yourself. And just when you're getting comfortable about talking about what you hope to be one day and how you hope to be a father, boom, surprise, kick you in the balls. And... Hey, fuck you! You came in and said you were going to get kicked in the balls. You came anyway. You deserved it. And that's what it felt like watching the Fantastic Four. That's my review.
Yeah, I went in expecting a bad movie. I got a movie. I don't think there was one thing they didn't fuck up. I thought that was impressive. There's nothing you couldn't fuck. Like, they fucked up everything. It was wonderful.
I got to that last scene, the ridiculous who knows who directed that final... naming ourselves scene at the end of the
film. I love that they never once give themselves a name. The Fantastic Four is never mentioned once in the whole movie. Mr. Fantastic never given a name. He's called that rock, or that rock-like thing at one point. I think that's all he's called. Like, nobody's given a name.
Here was my impressions of that scene as it's unfolded. And I watched it going, right, okay. I didn't even know it was the end of the movie. I thought, right, that fight with Doom was like a really unimpressive, like, death of that. Obviously now Doom's going to come back later on. They're going to have the actual finale.
I absolutely
that was a pretty quick. They solved that pretty quick. Hey, we should fight together. Okay, boom.
It's not the end. So that obviously, so I'm watching these guys walk over. They all kind of lean over this kind of machinery thing, and then like Johnny Storm says, like, "Oh, who's this guy over here? The thing that no one wants. The thing." And the thing that struck me is that's literally the first line that Johnny Storm has said to Ben Grimm in this entire fucking movie. So that's quite impressive, and I think that Sue Storm hasn't said one single fucking line to Ben Grimm in the whole fucking movie. Was Jamie Bell like green screened in later on? Was he invisible as well? Did no one notice him? So you have this as a problem as a start, because obviously one of the few good things about the old movies was that the key of it was the interplay between like Ben Grimm and like Johnny Storm, but that was non-existent here. And then you had, so I'm watching that going, that's a bit weird. And then, like, you have the, you know, like, the thing going, this whole thing's been fantastic, you know, and I'm like, he got over that horrific disfiguring accident quite quickly. You know, he seems to be alright with it all of a sudden. And then, like, you know, they go, how about, the screen goes black, comes up credits, I'm like, well, that's the fucking ending. And, like, and then literally, the whole crowd sat there, bated breath through the whole credits. It was this kind of, like, shared experience of, that can't be it. Surely there has to be something in the post-credits sequence where they go, surprise, we're just kidding, the actual movie's coming out next month.
We're
watching it going, where's the mid-credits sequence here? Where's the, something where they, something a little more,
look
something
where the manager, wraps it up. The manager of the theater comes in and says,
get to the end, the lights go up, and there's a shared kind of, from the whole crowd, and that thumbs up like the entire reaction to Fantastic Four.
You expect that the manager of the theater come in and say, "We're really sorry about that. Clearly, obvious to everyone that we missed a 12-minute reel in the middle of the film where there was a big action scene."
Although I will say it's a big victory for, you know, diversity and like progressiveness everywhere, because after that shitstorm of a movie, no one gives a fuck that Johnny Storm is black anymore. That's the problem.
It's true.
I had that moment. Like I didn't like the film. I didn't even get the film that I had hoped I would like. I thought I was going to get a film that no one else would like, and I would, which didn't happen either. And, if that first 40 minutes had been the rest of the film, then I would have really dug it. It would have been like, all right, the return of science fiction. But I got to the end, I'm like,
I didn't even think that was good.
The positive thing you could say about this is every single thing people said would be the disaster of this film had nothing to do with this film not working. Like, the only fault of this film really is that it's mind-numbingly boring.
the problem with this film isn't with the cast is young, it isn't like the Johnny Storm's black, it isn't any of this stuff that the internet were like shitting their pants over. What was the problem was that the film from its very inception was totally cynical in its like production, where the whole point of the movie was, let's do something so we can keep the rights, I don't know, this will do. And I think it's scary that someone can shit out $20 million on a kind of shrug and a, it'll do. And like, my God, this is how much money is just getting like shit. I'll take that $20 million and I'll make like 100 comics, you know?
It's true. All right. I don't know. I think it's really late over there, isn't it? You're getting near 2 in the morning.
It's coming up for 2 a.m. It's 1:36 a.m.
Yeah,
it's fine.
I tell you what, guys. Unless Keith, do you have any other pressing questions?
Let's tuck John in. John, thanks so much for staying up late. I know you're not feeling well, and making
especially after talking to us.
Fine. This might be the in memoriam to John Lee's podcast, depending on what time it goes up. So we'll see. But I will say that this week's a big week because we've got a series of Oxymoron signings. Tomorrow, I'm going through to Edinburgh to Deadhead Comics to do Oxymoron signings.
Definitely won't be up by then. Yeah. I'm guaranteeing you. I'm going
to
up by tomorrow.
Well. Speaking to you,
probably
the future,
somewhere next.
Speaking to you from the future, that signing went great. It was fantastic. then on Thursday, I'm back in Glasgow for Finn Planet, and we're going to be having an Oxymoron signing there. And finally, on Friday, I'm going through to Settlers in Hamilton. We've got a signing there, so it's really close. I got many book tours, so I'm really glad the book's out there now.
Basically, watch your Twitter and watch Comic Tribe's Twitter and find out where they can see you because you're going to be out there. Pumping this book because it's great shit.
Yep, but yep, that summed it up pretty much well. Yep, keep on looking. The book's coming out monthly, every month from now on. So next issue is September. It'll be out October, November. We're gonna have this a whole series done by the end of the year. So keep watching for it in your comic shops. Pick up issue one if you can. If not, jump in issue two. It's a great series. I'm really proud of it. I think everyone's done top notch working it.
And your Twitter, or your email, or your Facebook, or anything like that you want to give out.
Yeah, you can get me on Twitter at JohnLees927. That's JohnLees927. And Alex?
Yeah, it's just Alex Cormack and the number 4, because I guess I'm the fourth Alex Cormack out there.
In honor of the Fantastic Four movie.
Sure, exactly, yeah, bringing that back to
life. I'm out with 927.
Check out Oxymoron. They got a page up on Facebook that always has like updates and all that type of stuff. Yep. And
that's facebook.com/OxymoronSmiles. I believe, or just search for Oxymoron on Facebook. And also, I've not mentioned her yet, but I should mention it. Colorist Jules Rivera has done a fantastic job and is a great tag team partner with Alex. And you can find her on Twitter at Jules Rivera. Really fantastic colorist. Check it out.
Yep. Oh, and also, I got a Facebook page. It's Alex Cormack Illustrator. I forgot I'd give a plug for that too. And there's all sorts of wacky stuff on there. I don't know.
We would plug our stuff, but we don't want to confuse them. We said we want them to go to your stuff on this time. Just go to their stuff. If you're listening, you've already found us. We got a lot of people listening anyway, so it doesn't matter. Yeah. We don't need any more. God damn it. You guys.
we could use more if we can find a way to monetize them. But at this point,
just okay. Listen to the – thanks for listening to the podcast. But go check out this Comics Tribe stuff. We've been, you know, forever. Talking about how good it is.
Then you can find this all on Tinder. That's a
thanks very much, guys. Anything else, Keith, you want to say?
No, I'm good. I'm really looking forward to reading the rest of the issues. And Alex, if you have a big, massive dead body scene coming up, I know you haven't finished drawing. Screen grab right now, Mo and I.
I'm on you. Don, I got you guys. I'll throw you in there somewhere.
All right. Excellent.
I'll make you famous. It'll be great.
You can check out Keith. He's in Morning Glories. Take that and imagine him dead.
All right.
All right,
well,
guys.
Thanks for having us, guys.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you for having us. Absolutely.
Fantastic. We'll talk when you're on your next. I know that Tyler will be hassling for the next Oxymoron miniseries by mid next year. He'd be like, I gotta look a free comic day, John. Alex, let's make this happen.
We do need you to say you know, thank you to Tyler for and give a shout. You know, thank him for he's great. You know, yeah, please. Tell him if he ever wants to talk. We'd love to talk to him and anybody else, Comics Tribe. Well, except for Moldy. You know, he's high maintenance. That's a lot of energy there.
It's like Van Halen for a podcast. You gotta have like a pool of M&Ms and you have to have all set up with them.
It's
don't want to deal with it.
Something. But no, please say hi to him. Say if you guys talk to him over.
Mo is like a really talented artist. It's just that he's human garbage as well.